Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hello and welcome to Bitches on Comics. I'm your host, S.E. Fleenor, and thank you for joining us for these flashback files. Right now, Bitches on Comics is on hiatus while we sort out some personal matters and get to work behind the scenes, making sure we can come back strong very soon. These flashback files are our opportunity to share with you some of the amazing work we've been doing over on Patreon. We're so happy to be back and so glad you've joined us. Please stick around for this flashback file where we share an episode that originally appeared on our Patreon. We would like to thank all our patrons and all our supporters who've been there for us through this whole amazing podcast. And if you haven't joined us on Patreon, you can do so at patreon.com/queerspec. On behalf of Sarah Century, Monica Estrella Negra, Kate Warner, and Supriya Saxena, I'm S.E. Fleenor, and we're so glad that you've joined us. Welcome to Bitches on Comics and to a very special Patreon exclusive interview. Woo, 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 woo! Air horn! Air horn! I'm S.E. Fleenor and I am fucking delighted to be here today with the lovely Hedwig Hale. Hedwig, welcome to the pod.
Hello!
Super hello. Excited to be here.
That's it. Oh, I love the hello! It's perfect. That's the energy.
Oh, it's my first podcast. Can you tell?
Oh, no, I couldn't. That's one. That touches my heart. I love whenever folks come on and it's their first time. I'm like, welcome, my friends.
You're taking my virginity. Please be gentle.
Yeah, totally. Now I'm blushing. Lovely. So, okay. Hedwig, we have so much to talk about today. Obviously, we're going to get really into your comic that's out right now. Oh, I'm so excited. But first, before we dive in, let's assume folks don't maybe know you as well. So tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your deal?
I assume that no one knows me at all, especially since I just started using my pen name, Hedwig, instead of my birth name, Heather. But I never felt like a Heather. I don't know. They're like,
I feel that
blondes from the 80s who are popular. Like, it just never really jived with me. And there's actually another Heather Hale who's a writer. So I thought for years about using a new name and I'm excited about it, even though it's an awkward, like, you know, growing pains of like, what do we call you and this? And I'm just trying to figure that out. But other than that, I am a writer of many kinds of things who's just trying to figure it out right now. I worked in marketing for a really long time, writing all this stuff for TV shows that aren't for TV shows. Did a lot of like cool Comic-Con activation, creative directing kind of stuff. Really like cool jobs, like a good creative job that I had for a long time, but marketing will take it out of you. And recently I made a big leap and I quit my job and had saved up a little to focus on some writing and, you know, starting a new chapter. And it's exciting, but scary.
Oh, congratulations. How good for you. I'm glad you were able to quit that job, even though it was good. It was taking up a lot of your time because that's what jobs do. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see what else comes out of you having a little more time on your hands.
Yes.
I think it's going to be exciting. So we are here today primarily to talk about She Bites number one. I know there are other issues out, but we're going to keep it to number one to get people enticed and ready to pick up the rest of the issues. But before we dive in there, I just wanted to ask a little bit generally, like, how did you get into comics, maybe as a reader, but then also as a writer? Like, why this medium, I guess? Because you said you write for a lot of different ones.
Yeah. I mean, I've loved comics probably since like high school and college. I was the oldest of three sisters and my parents didn't really, all the nerd stuff I was into as a kid, comics were just never really something that crossed my desk. But in high school and college, I got really into it. I used to always go to the big Carnegie Library in Pittsburgh, where I'm from, and get out a bunch of comics and a bunch of like weird Bollywood movies and stuff, and like ride my bike home. And like that was one of my favorite things. I remember getting like bottomless belly button from the library because it's huge and like was super expensive, and read it, and like somebody had decoded the message and like left the paper. It was just neat. Libraries are neat. But that was kind of my intro to loving comics. And in terms of writing them, it's something I've always loved comics. So when I wrote this story, it was originally a pilot like 4 years ago. I had wanted it to be a comic, but my like reps had no idea how to even go about it. And breaking into comics as a writer is like pretty weird and difficult. So I kind of just dropped that idea. And then several years later in quarantine, I saw a post for the script to comic contest, the first time they were doing it on Deadline. And I was like, I have a script I would like to be a comic. I'm sure I won't win this contest. And then I entered it and I won the contest. So that is how I made my first comic. It's not how I would recommend doing it necessarily, but that's what happened for me, question mark.
Wow. What a journey from it being a TV pilot, right? And then it now you're sitting in your brain and then a contest. Who doesn't love a deadline, right? Give me a deadline. Make me get my work done. love that. And then, wow. So you won the competition. Was that was with the script, correct?
Yeah. So the contest, they took pilot scripts with the intention of making them into comics and then also trying to like option them eventually as like shows. So that's like the idea of the contest.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. Okay, cool. So let's talk about She Bites. You know, I have like all kinds of thoughts and I'm like, oh my God, I would describe it this way. And I will. But I would love to hear from you, Hedwig. How do you describe She Bites to people when they're like, oh, what's this comic you've worked on?
I mean, I guess the official like tagline is Elsie is a 134-year-old vampire in the body of a 9-year-old girl. And she is living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in the 90s. And she can't go out and do anything because people are like, where's your mom? So she has to hire a babysitter. And she ends up hiring this like suicidal, like pathetic teenage girl, Brenda. And this is about their friendship.
You know, the premise gives me big Let the Right One In vibes, like the original one. But like if you tried to make Let the Right One In a horror comedy instead of just like horrifying,
yes.
Which like we talked about this off air, like this is She Bites is scary. It's not scary, you know, even for all the comedic, you know, there's so many comedic lines in there and so many little moments, especially in the dynamic between these two characters. It's just so delightful.
Thank you.
But it did give me that vibe, and maybe it is just like the little girl who's actually secretly a very old vampire, but it was also something about the sensibilities of those girls. You know, they're like, I don't know, it's so funny to see someone just like sick of it. You know what I mean? Just like sick of it, but they look like they're 9. Like that's so funny. I love that whole piece. So for you, when did you know this needed to be a story about an old vampire that looks like a young girl? Like when did that click?
I mean, I started writing this many years ago, probably like 5 years ago or something. I remember like even though I've been working in marketing, I wanted to be a TV writer, still want to be a TV writer. So I would work on at least one pilot every year. And I was really dedicated to making sure that I got at least one pilot written every year while I was working full time. So I wanted to write a horror comedy because they're my favorite. And I was just kind of like doing some brain blasts of like characters and things and whatever. And these two characters kind of just emerged because I don't know. I think that they're both a part of me. Like when we were pitching it for TV stuff, like after the comic was done, that's kind of how I describe them. It's like they're both a part of me. I feel like it's an Adam's rib situation. Like Elsie is this world-weary hermit who's just over it. And then Brenda is this like sensitive, depressed mess who like is her passions could ruin her if they don't work out the way that she wants them to. And kind of like what they provide for each other, like the engine of what they provide for each other is something that I thought about a lot. And I think is what kind of makes it cool. But I don't know if that actually answered your question, but... That was an answer.
It did. It was like the emergence of the character. So I want to know about vampires. Do you have a deep love for vampires? Did it just fit this premise specifically?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be like, I have fangs in my closet. I don't have fangs in my closet, but I'm like a hardcore, like, horror comedy person, like, going way back. And I mean, vampires are definitely just a part of the fiber of the, you know, landscape of that kind of stuff. And I just thought that, you know, it would, I don't, honestly, like, I'm not exactly sure why, where it came from. It's just like, they emerged. And, you know, I as much as, you know, the Joss Whedon controversy is what it is, I do, I did love Buffy. Although I came to it later in life. I didn't start watching it until, like, after college. And then I watched all of it and tried to, like, follow some weird online guides of how to watch It.
Oh, my
Angel.
God. I did the exact same thing. I found it in grad school. Oh, my God. Let me, I have to tell you this story, Hedwig, because I think you would appreciate it.
Please do.
There was this, like, beautiful, cool, smart girl in one of my classes in grad school. It was like a PhD level class. I was a master's degree student and I was like, I like TV and film. Let me in. And the guy was like, yeah, you're in. I love it. And this girl was just like this brilliant mind. You know, she would criticize film and TV and I would just be like, damn. And she kept bringing up Buffy. And she was like, you know, I just think Buffy this and Buffy that and Buffy's philosophy and Buffy. And I was like, I have such a crush on this girl. Like, I've got to go watch Buffy. Like, I'd never seen any of it. And I was like, I'm going to watch every single episode because this brilliant woman sitting before me is so cool.
That's so funny because I had got my master's in cinema studies from NYU, which sounds like a brag, but it's just a fact. And it's the coolest, smartest thing I ever did. So whatever, it's a brag. But a lot of my friends there, especially who were like into horror and stuff, also loved Buffy. And so I think that's one of the things that pushed me towards it.
That's so funny.
Grad school is where we started watching Buffy because that's the natural path into it.
I know all my friends, like when I got really into it, were like, you mean the show from when we were like 14? And I was like, oh, dang. Yeah, I guess I do mean the show. I didn't watch it. I didn't have TV as a kid, really. So it wasn't like something I grew up with. But yeah, Buffy's really integral to me, too. I was just working on a werewolf story and Buffy, like, helped me frame out some pieces of it, you know, where I was like, okay, this seems like this and this seems like that. And it's funny that way. You know, yeah, Joss Whedon can suck and still, like, have been part of creating something beautiful. You know, people remember Buffy as being, like, his, but it's like, it was Jane Espenson's,
Jane Espenson,
too.
Man.
It was Marty Noxon's, too, you know?
Do you want to know something really cool?
Of course I do.
Me and Jane Espenson have the same manager, or at least we did, like, 3 years ago when I started having her as my manager.
That's wild.
Which makes me feel like a huge success, even though I haven't actually, like, done anything.
Well, you know what? Like, I would feel very successful in that situation as well.
I mean, you know, I'm getting there. But yeah, it's fun. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to go into Joss Whedon. But yeah, Jane Espenson rocks. And Buffy, I mean, I love Buffy, but I love the, like, goofy Buffy. Like, I'm real mad at Joss Whedon about some things. And even before controversy of recent years, I would, like, get into a drunken, like, deathmatch argument with people about, like, why did he kill Wash? Like, I can't believe that. They only had the Firefly movie because of the fans. Like, that's just not cool. I don't know. A lot of things where I would, like, very passionately, like, fight, you know, random people at bars about concerning Joss Whedon. So it was complicated for me before it was complicated.
I love it. That's so funny. So, you know, coming back to horror comedy, you know, I'm a huge horror comedy fan as well. I think it's one of those things that if you can nail it, it's so unique. It becomes something other than either of its sort of, I'd say, like, antecedent genres. And so I'm curious for you, like, why do you love horror comedy and what do you think you can achieve in it? And what do you think you do achieve in She Bites that maybe you couldn't do if it wasn't horror and comedy?
Yeah, I mean, I come from a family with a lot of mental illness and issues, and finding the humor in, like, really, really dark moments is the way that I've survived for a really long time. And I think those are the funniest moments, because if you can laugh about something when it's really dark, like, it's like amplified by 10, you know, and it's just, horror comedy, like, you can do a lot of different things with a lot of, like, I think not even just horror comedy, but, like, any kind of genre thing. I remember I got into anime when I was, like, in college, too. Like, just, well, came to a lot of these things later in life. And I remember watching, like, Evangelion and being, like, I think genre stuff just makes the story bigger than it is. And when it comes to things that are really emotional, if you can have that story structure, like making it feel as big as it feels to you, that's what I think is so cool about, you know, fantasy and horror and anime and these different like kind of genre spaces that have some of our favorite things. You guys made me watch Winona Earp finally.
Oh, dang. What'd you think?
Wait, I haven't watched the last season yet.
Okay.
I don't know. But I really enjoyed it a lot. I was like, I don't know. Whenever I come to any of these shows, I'm always like very skeptical at first. I'm like, the Magicians, whatever. And then I end up loving it and like crying and being obsessed with it. And I'm like, just accept who you are.
Yeah, I just recently started watching Teen Wolf, and very similar, where I was like, I don't know about this. I need something to put on while I'm working. Like, I'll watch Teen Wolf. And then I didn't do any work. I was just like watching Teen Wolf because I was like, this is amazing. I love this show. Yeah, you know, I think that it's cool to hear you talk about like the sort of gifts of genre and of, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and being able to sort of, I like the way you put it. You were like, it's kind of like blowing up the feelings and making them even bigger. Because what do you think that is? Is it like the stakes? Is it the nature of it being non-realism based?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, the format of the story makes it like that. Like, so with Evangelion, it's kind of like, okay, so the weight of the world is literally on this teen boy's shoulders. And that's what it feels like sometimes, to be a frail teenage boy, you know? It's the apocalypse, it's the end of the world, you know? It kind of makes things, like, more dramatic in context, but really, like, it's about the emotion that's under it, if that makes sense. I don't know, it just makes it bigger and more ridiculous, and most things that are hard feel big and ridiculous.
Mm. Oh, I like that. Most things that are hard do feel big and ridiculous.
They are big and ridiculous. Like,
yeah, a lot of my life is like, what? Why is this happening?
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, I might as well be a friggin' vampire because this is ridiculous. Like, that's kind of how I look at it and why.
I already am up all night and sleep all day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
I feel like I've been alive forever. I just sit in a house by myself and, you know, like, I don't know. It's just, yeah. It just feels right. Dark comedy is always, like, where I go to. And I think a lot of genre, like, goes into that dark territory because of the subject matter of, like, it's the end of the world or so-and-so's attacking or blah, blah, blah. And dark comedy is definitely, like, my pocket.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. So I'm curious, when you think about She Bites, what do you think you get from positioning it as horror comedy that you couldn't do if maybe it was straight up horror?
Yeah. I mean, to me, a lot of it is about the mental illness kind of storyline that's underneath of it all. Like Brenda, who's the main character, teenage girl, is, you know, she applied to school, and some of this I like definitely lifted from my own experience. Like, she grew up in a poor family. She couldn't really afford to apply to a lot of schools. She dedicated her life to wanting to be a musician and put all of her eggs in this basket of going to like Juilliard, essentially, and she didn't get in. And then what now? So she's incredibly depressed. She's suicidal. Her plan is to make some money so she can go to Scotland and jump off a cliff. Like, that's her plan. And so that's kind of how she ends up in this situation. But I think for me, the mental health and how they kind of help each other, how Elsie kind of like helps Brenda look at things differently and maybe makes her a little bit less suicidal while also making her want to kill herself for other reasons, you know, kind of ridiculous dynamic is what it stems from.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, you know, I think too about that moment where, I'm so sorry. What is the vampire's name?
Oh, Elsie.
Elsie.
I wanted to name her Esme. Thanks, Twilight. I've never watched Twilight or read it because I get super mad at things that people try to shove down my throat. And I'm like, no, I'm never watching it. Like Harry Potter, I never did it. Don't judge me. But I wanted to name her Esme after this J.D. Salinger short story, and I couldn't. and I'm sad still. Friggin' Twilight.
So I really, you know, I used to be very like, about everything. And now it's like, I've just been in the pandemic for forever. And so I'm like running out of things.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, the Twilights are free. I'll watch those. You know what? I know everyone loves it, but I could not get past the fucking baseball game. I was like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen, ever.
Well, I watched like every Real Housewives season during quarantine, so I just went in like a slightly different direction. But
yeah, we got really into like all the YA sci-fi fantasy. We watched like all the movies. Well, you know, there are highs and lows. Like I would say the first Divergent, pretty good. But then after that, I'm like, I don't understand. Like what? What does that mean?
Yeah,
that's.
I think sci-fi stuff since like a lot of times starts out great, and then they just try to make it too complicated. Like the second and third season of Orphan Black. I'm like, what is even happening? What's happening in Westworld? I have a cinema studies degree, and I need to like study to just understand what's happening in Westworld anymore. Like
I like that part. For Westworld, I feel like it works. Maybe that's because Evan Rachel Wood is like everything and everything. So maybe I'm just like willing to sit through things that are a little bit hard to follow. I liked the most recent season. I know like that was not, well, actually there's one coming out now and I haven't seen that one. So I guess season three I liked, because I felt like season two was a mess.
Yeah, season two is where I was like, I can't. This is hurting my brain. I'm not having a good time.
I did like watching, Maeve kill a lot of people. That was, like, pretty fun.
Yeah, the first season, I, like, felt okay, like, doing a homework about it. But the second season, I don't know. I was like, I gotta stop. I'm going back to the Housewives. I need to turn my brain off.
Yeah, I keep thinking that, like, someone needs to make, like, a Real Housewives of Mordor. Like, I would watch the shit out of that.
I mean, that's what the new Lord of the Rings show is going to be.
I was just going to say, the Rings of Power does have a lot more women in it. So maybe in a way.
It is?
I got my wish.
I haven't watched it yet, but I'm excited. I like to stack things. I'm very impatient. Like, I can't read floppies. I can only read trades because I am greedy and impatient, and I'm not good at taking care of my things. So floppies, like, it's like, oh, so I put it in my backpack, that's ruined now. So yeah, which makes me a bad comic fan, I guess, but I don't know, I'm just doing my best over here, guys.
I think that we're all gonna be okay with that. just this once, Hedwig. So you know, I wanted to ask a little bit about the experience of working with the artist, and their name is Alberto Hernandez R. So I would love to know how you all got connected. And then you also had a letterer, Dave Lanfear. So I would love to hear about the process of working with them. And, you know, what was it like to see someone sort of render your things that have existed in your mind on the page?
Okay, so the artist that is for the most recent art of the comic, Alberto, is amazing. Finding an artist was honestly my favorite part of coming to my first comic book. It was also the hardest part, I think, because this story is an odd tone where it is supposed to be funny and scary and gross, but cute. Like it was a tough role to fill. And I, of course, got super excited and looked up like 950,000 different artists. And I was like, I want to make all the comic books forever. So originally, I was working with another artist whose name is Digi Daguna, and they are so, so cool. I super recommend that you check out their work. And they had kind of like a more cartoonish style, and I love Digi's work. And unfortunately, after we did our Ashcan release at New York Comic Con last year, Scout kind of decided that they wanted to go a slightly different direction with the art. And I unfortunately had to find a new artist, but also fortunately, because Alberto is an incredible talent. This guy can do literally anything, and
the art rules. It is so beautiful. It's so expressive. The facial expressions, oh, such a good job.
No, he's unreal, and it was such a pleasure to work with him, and he's a super nice guy. And like, for me, as a writer who usually writes scripts, like, you write scripts and sure, maybe some people read them, but you'd never really get to see them become something most of the time. I think one of the reasons why comics is such an exciting medium for me is because, one, I love collaborating with artists and getting to see the characters. Like, the first time I saw Elsie and Brenda drawn, like, I cried for, like, an hour. And the second time I saw them, I probably cried for, like, at least a half hour. So, you know, it was just really amazing for me to see it come together. And Alberto is so amazing at detail work. And the story takes place in Pittsburgh, which is my hometown. And seeing him draw, like, the Pittsburgh City Steps, which is on the cover of the first issue. And as we get farther into it, there's, like, some other really cool Pittsburgh landmarks that are in these really, like, emotional scenes. And seeing those things come together for me and getting to see the story told in a way that people were going to get to see and enjoy was so just rewarding and awesome and makes me want to make all the comic books for forever only.
That's awesome. What a feeling. So, you know, I know that it premiered in July, correct?
Yes. So the Ashcan was like last year, and then we did a big release at San Diego Comic-Con this year.
And so that's when issue one came out, correct?
Correct.
And is it a monthly release?
As far as I understand, the next issue is coming out October 5th, and it's the second issue, and it's my favorite one, and it's really fun and funny and weird, and there's like a mall, and there's 90s montage
hijinks.
Yeah. I was also really inspired by Adventures in Babysitting for this. That was kind of one of my main, like, beloved touchstones. So if you like Adventures in Babysitting and dark horror comedies, this is for you.
Cute. I love it. Yeah. And like, if you ever watched Let the Right One In and were like, what if this was a horror comedy? This is also the comic for you. Because big Let the Right One In vibes. I'm here for it. So what do you have on the horizon? Obviously, we've got issue two coming up. And then it sounds like you kind of find out the release date at some point after that comes out. You'll for issue three, is that right?
Yeah, it sounds like it's probably going to be in December. And then the trade, I think they said they're aiming for February. I think just because of the printing mumbo jumbo.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's the end of the world and publishing right now, literally. So, you know, that's what they tell me. But I am trying to understand the biz, but I'm like, I don't understand solicitation. I'm learning. I'm doing my best to learn. I want to stay in the game now that I'm in it. But, you know, I'm doing my best.
You know, it's a lot. Yeah, we've spent a couple of episodes over the years trying to break down different pieces as well as we understand it. And then, like, reading other people's writing about it and then talking about it on the pod. And so,
That's what I wanted to tell you.
Oh, please.
My fanecdote. Okay, so I went camping recently, and because no one will ever go camping with me and I don't have a car, I went there on my Vespa and I did like hammock camping. And I was camping by myself, and in the middle of the night, something was like rustling outside of my hammock, and I was really freaked out because I thought it might be a bear or something, but I couldn't get out of the hammock without, like, you know, I couldn't get out of the hammock, obviously. And so I was
you'd be right on top of whatever it
is. Yeah, like the bear or like whatever, the raccoon, a person, like anyone.
The alien.
I bought an axe before I went. I brought an axe with me in case someone or a bear tried to murder me. But like, did I have confidence in my ability to wield the axe? Probably not.
Am I an axe swinger with enough accuracy to make a difference? This was a tough moment.
It's hard to say, but here's where the podcast comes in. I was like, what am I going to do? And I had this little speaker in my, like, pocket that I had been, like, listening to the podcast on all day. And so I turned on the podcast to scare away the bear or raccoon.
Did it work?
I mean, it eventually left. But it comforted me at the very least. So it let me,
like, I love it!
Calm down. So you were with me in the woods, and you really kept me company. And help me in my time of need where I was probably just being like brushed by a raccoon. Raccoon's not a fan of the podcast, but that's on them.
You know, that really is on them. I feel like if we have an audience that is like, no, and it's partially raccoons, I'm fine with that.
you were asking me what I was doing. Okay, so You know, I took some time off to write. I'm like finishing up a couple projects. One is another comic project that I'm hoping to do that I just finished the like pitch packet kind of situation that I'm going to be sending out to publishers soon. That is kind of like a Buffy meets One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So hopefully that becomes a thing. We'll see if they like it. It's another script I had written like years ago that I loved, but didn't really work out. But I think, you know, Buffy meets One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. That's a good comic.
Yeah, I think so. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, but it's similar tone, like horror comedy, kind of like mental illness focus kind of thing, ensemble, lady cast. So hopefully that will exist. And I already have like this really dope artist who is amazing that I found back in the throngs of artists that I talked to for She Bites, and her work inspired me to get this project specifically back out because I was like, wow, I wish I could work with her on something. And yeah, so hopefully that will be going soon. And then I'm just, you know, working on some other writing stuff. I'm working on a secret abortion comedy script. It's a secret. We'll see if it becomes a, who knows, you know? I'm just really happy and thankful to be writing and just living my life in a way that doesn't involve Slack. And
Sarah and I really hate Slack.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's hard. Sometimes I try to explain to people, they're like, oh, let's create a Slack for this thing. And I'm like, sure, I will literally never open it.
Do you want me to hate it? Then okay. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Slack is like, in some ways, a form of torture. Little pings.
I live a no notification diet. I have all my notifications turned off, even on my phone, except for like phone calls. So I don't know. Yeah. Slack was not a welcome addition to my life. And I'm just really happy to be at least pretending to be a full-time writer for a few months before I have to go back to it. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, who knows what the path holds.
There's some exciting rumblings for She Bites being adapted and optioned for a show, so that would be great.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
You know, that pitching's been like a whole cool experience, and, you know, I just want to be the less problematic Joss Whedon. Is that too much to ask?
Is it too much to ask? I would say no.
I mean,
so, dear listeners, please go pick up She Bites number one. Probably at the time of this airing, number two was also out. And get ready for number three and The Trade. And we'll all be hanging tight waiting for the TV adaptation. I'm assuming TV, but you know what? The screen adaptation is what I will say. We are all looking forward to and hanging on tight for that, Hedwig. You know, if you want folks to be able to find you, where can they find you online?
There's a She Bites comic Instagram that you can follow if you like, although I really tend to only do a lot of posts around cons. I'm trying my best, you know, but my personal one is at Heather Makes Things, Heather being my name from another life, but it will say Heather Hedwig. Again, the growing pains with the name changing situation. But, you know, you can also see my beautiful crafting work on there where I make things like crocheted penises with googly eyes and bow ties and swear word embroidery circles and things. Always got to be making something. Get the poison out. But yeah, you can find me there.
Amazing. And you know, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you today. She Bites is so fun. The tone is pitch perfect. And I'm really excited about what lies ahead for you and for this comic. So again, thanks for being a listener, Hedwig. That's so cool. Thank you for coming on the podcast. We're so happy to have you. And we'll have you back again sometime soon.
Love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Bitches on Comics. We are a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Twitter at @BitchesOnComics and on Instagram at @BitchesOnComics. Our website is, brace yourself, bitchesoncomics.com. If you go there, you can listen to any of our episodes, and we've got other shit that we put on tabs. I don't remember what it is. I am in charge of updating the website, however, so good luck.
Thanks for the heads up. I'll go to this website now.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.